I would like to introduce tonight's speaker, Nikki from San Diego.
Hi, everyone. I'm Nikki. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Nikki.
And this is only my second time being here, so thank you for having me. So I would like to start off with my sobriety date. I got sober here in San Diego in September 4th, 2009. And I wanted to say, before anyone starts doing the math and thinking, oh, that's a long time ago, for those of you that are new, for anyone who is struggling, anyone who's coming back, please don't get too hung up on how long anyone who shares at any meeting has been sober. And I say that because when I was new, I remember when I had 2 weeks of sobriety. I went to a meeting, and there was someone taking a token, and that person was just trying to be humble and said, oh, they were celebrating 1 year. And they were trying to be humble, and they said, well, you know, I only have a very little amount of time. And as somebody who had 2 weeks, I got up and ran out the door because I felt like, oh, my gosh, these 2 weeks felt like 2 years to me. I felt every second of every minute of every hour of those first 2 weeks. And I could not imagine standing up and saying, this year is nothing. So please, when you hear that I've been sober for 16 years, please don't let that shut your ears off to anything you might hear tonight. And by no means am I going to paint some picture of me being some sort of saint or perfect person. I'm clean tonight. You're welcome. This is an improvement that has come with sobriety. I don't know how many of you can relate to that. So I come from a very small town. It is somewhere in the Central Valley of California, somewhere between Fresno and Bakersfield, a little agricultural town. And I think the population when I was little was about 29,000. So there are smaller towns, there are bigger towns. That's where I came from. And some of my earliest memories were of being extremely uncomfortable. Before I have memories of doing something, going somewhere, a toy, anything like that, I remember how I felt. And I was already crawling out of my skin. And I don't have a reason for you. I can't tell you why. That's just how little me was. And I preferred my life in my mind and my imagination to what was happening out around me, because I already identified the outside world as not safe. And I felt more secure in whatever bubble, imagination, fantasy world I could create in my own mind. And to this day, just the other day, I was doing some step work that I'm going to go over with my sponsor, and I am still finding the underlying theme of insecurity. And not in all the maybe superficial ways that might first come to mind, like, oh, my hair, but more of, I'm not safe. The feeling of never being safe and looking, grasping for anything that can change that feeling, no matter how artificial it is, to make me feel like, okay, I'm good now. I can come be out here where the world is, where the people are, and pretend to function. So as a kid, when I was little, I went to a very small private Lutheran school in the middle of nowhere. Second and third grade were in the same classroom, teeny tiny. And I'm not sure how to put this, but it was not a safe learning environment. This was an environment where physical discipline was allowed. Yet another environment where I felt unsafe, insecure, further withdrawal from reality. I needed a drink when I was six. So soon after that, those events came to light. My family did not know these things were happening. Once they found out, I was pulled out of there, put into public school. Another environment where I did not feel safe. I was not secure. I could not relate with other kids. I remember, even as a young kid, watching others interact, and it looked so natural, so effortless, so, if I use the word normal, I didn't know how to do that. I knew how to argue. I knew how to cause trouble. I did not know how to relate with other people because I had already found this defense mechanism to feeling so uncomfortable. And it was my withdrawal, my disconnection, my detachment. So I guess there was no wonder that I had a lot of frenemies. I didn't know how to be a genuine, open friend from the get-go. Didn't know how to be that. I was not that person, never was. Started having a lot of trouble in school. And my parents couldn't really put it together. They couldn't figure it out. My needs were provided for at home. Mom and dad married, still married to this day. I have an older brother, 3 years older than me. And they tried their best. They did their best. And they couldn't fix Nikki. So I was very behind in school, which gave me further self-confidence issues, shame. I carried the shame with me from the physical discipline that had occurred at a school where it was allowed, as I mentioned. And somewhere along the way, I had gotten the message that those were the consequences when you're a bad person. And I believed this to my very core. So, as soon as I could, as soon as I heard of anyone's older brother, older sister, someone had alcohol, I could not wait. I grew up hearing from various family members about the good old days of the parties, and I'd see the movies where the people could go crazy and act however they wanted because they were always drinking or using other recreational substances. And I could not wait. I thought, well, that I get it now. That's why I'm like this. I don't have that yet. And I really, really wanted that. I looked forward to the time that I could have that. I had a goal as a kid. I had a goal, unspoken. I would say my actual regular drinking started somewhere in the middle of high school. And gosh, it was like that light switch flipped on. I know you know what I'm talking about. Oh my gosh. I have found it, whatever it was. And I would chase that until I got sober. Never found it again, but I looked under a lot of rocks. I looked in any, you know, right? You know, any other type of situation, any other type of recreational substance, any other type of distraction to try and help me feel what I felt that first time I got drunk. Nothing ever came close, but I had the obsession. I had the obsession. Do I need to be concerned about that? Okay. It's just backfire. We're good. By the end of high school, I was in honors classes. Don't ask me how I became this person. My father coined the term a chameleon. I was in the honors classes. I had the facade. I had the costume of a kid that was functioning, a person, young adult that was functioning. I was doing the honors classes, I was in the recreational activities, I was in the band, I was in the things. But my goal was to get drunk that weekend And I would bug anybody and everyone to find the party, whether I knew those people or not. I was showing up because they had alcohol, and I would do anything to get it. And by then, I was also dabbling in other things, too. I started drunk driving very close to the end of high school into my college years. It was something everybody did. I'm not using that as an excuse, but I thought I was so special. Nothing could ever happen to me if I did it. I'm a good person. So it became more and more my priority. Alcohol did. I didn't realize that for quite a while. I would say I didn't realize how much of a priority alcohol was for me until I was about 23 years old. Graduated college, had all these honors, yay, hoop-de-la. Went off to graduate school, got a master's degree, and I thought, this is the proof that I'm normal. You know, normal functioning people can do this, not people with big other problems. This proves I'm okay. But my experience is alcohol does not care what letters come after your name. Alcohol does not care. In fact, that just gives alcohol, my alcoholism, more to take away from me. That did not cure my alcoholism, and it did not make me special. My alcoholism continued. I was moving every single year thinking, you know, these new roommates, they don't know me. I can start over. I'll be different. They don't have to know about any of those humiliating things that I do when I drink. They won't know. I could be another Nikki. Same thing, year after year after year. Until one day, I was still drinking at, I don't know, 7:30 in the morning. My style is binge drinking. Once I start, I do not stop until I cannot physically function anymore. There is never enough alcohol for this brain. Despite the humiliations and all their flavors and colors, we've all had them. One morning, I was still drinking, and it was my thing. I would drink all night long into the morning as long as I had enough supply, and then when I heard my roommate start to stir, I'd run back to my room, thinking they'll never know. They won't know what I was doing. I don't have to explain anything. And I remember being out there, and the sun was coming up, and I saw this woman go jogging by. It was the most baffling thing I had ever seen. It was like I'd seen an alien, and I remember looking at her just thinking, oh, how do people do that? I thought she was the special one. Like, I had missed some handbook. I was absent the day they handed out the handbook that explained how to function like that. And it was just a mystery. I thought, whoa, did she go to bed early? Yeah. Maybe she has a dog and she has to take the dog out. I could not grasp that was a regular existence. Mine was the extraordinary one, and not in a good way. But I knew something was off. And I gotta tell you this. I went to a bookstore, and I bought a book of Addiction for Dummies. Yeah, I went to the self-help section. It's there. Yeah, you can buy, yeah. I mean, you could buy one to learn how to crochet and stuff, but I bought one to understand what addiction was. And I wanted it dumbed down, and I wanted it honest. I think I still have that book. But it helped me see me for the first time. And there was this little workbook in it, and I was like, ooh, I'm just going to do this workbook, and I'm going to be better. Great. And then I thought, oh, well, if I could go for a run. I could jog like that lady. I could go for a jog. So I waited for a day that I wasn't hungover. I went for a jog. And it was like magic. I felt magical. And then I decided, well, if I could do that, maybe I cannot drink. Yeah. So I started marking every day on my calendar with an X that I didn't drink. I was so proud of myself. And looking back on that, I could not see how that's a big indicator something's wrong. People can go their whole lives without alcohol and are perfectly fine, or could have a drink once in a while. They don't think about it, nothing at all. Here I am, I'm like, yes, another X. And then eventually I made it a month, and then I found a reason, very trivial reason to drink. And it was the exact same thing. Nothing was different, absolutely nothing. Are you smiling at? My 7-year-old's up here. She's, you like this? Okay. So when I was 24, I moved to San Diego. And I was very excited because I was going to move in with my best friend, and it was going to be one nonstop party, or at least that was my plan. I got sober a month later. Plans ruined. And this is an interesting way that I did it. I haven't heard anyone do this yet, but I'm sure I'm not the only one. Someone tell me later. Yes, the leaves were rolling around. Anyway, there was ambiance. So I woke up. I didn't wake up. I regained consciousness one day, face down. It was middle of the day. I was in like one of these things on my own bed. Right? Come on. You know that you feel good when you end up in your own bed. Some of you are looking at me like, never did that. If you didn't struggle with that problem, cool. But I hurt so bad. My whole body hurt. My everything hurt. And I didn't want to look at my phone to see what I had been doing that night before. And I didn't want to do the walk of shame looking for my car. And I didn't want to look at the car because I drove drunk all the time. On the highways, on the freeways, people in the car. And the grief hit. The grief and the despair hit. And I finally had that little whatever that said, God, gotta stop. Gotta stop living like this. There was no one there telling me there was anything wrong with me, because I had surrounded myself with people that behaved the way I did for the most part. I was very close to being homeless. I couldn't hold down a job. I didn't care. I remember having a couple dollars in my wallet, and I walked across the parking lot into the grocery store. And I had to choose between getting drunk or having something to eat that night. You all know what choice I made. Yeah, I was tired of living like that. So I stood up, I staggered into the living room where my best friend was, and I said, I think I have a problem. And she looked at me and she goes, okay. Because the problem was mine, right? It was no one had to validate that. No one needed to be like, yay, let's fix. No, I was on my own. It was my problem. I had to fix it somehow. I went online. I found a substance abuse rehabilitation center that would let me go for alcohol counseling on an outpatient basis, and I went. I just took my ass there because I was so tired of the suffering. And it wasn't just the horrible hangovers and the shame and the guilt and the loss of any morals or standards or self-respect, as if that wouldn't be enough. It was the fact that I barely had relationships with people anymore. I used my parents, I used my family, I called them up when I needed something, and I knew it. My friend list was dwindling. I was tired of life being this big, baffling question. So I took myself to an alcohol counseling program. And one of the first things the lady told me to do was go to AA. She was in AA too. I didn't want to go to AA. I'm not one of those people who walked into my first AA meeting and felt at home and was so welcome and loved it and listened. No, I'm pretty sure I had a wet brain. I didn't understand anything that was being said. I was terrified of every single one of you. Terrified. Because if you were anywhere near as insane as I was, I did not want to know you. No. So I waited till everyone went in the room. They ran in last minute, sat down, and ran out 5 minutes before it ended. Okay? Didn't hear a thing. And really didn't like you holding my hand. And then after a week, I went back to that counselor, and she said, "How's it going?" I'm like, And I told her the truth, what I was doing. And she said, "Yeah, that's not how it works. You got to go in there on time and talk to people after the meeting. You got to get a sponsor." I did not understand the concept of sponsor. And I had zero pride left at this time, like none. So when the meeting ended, I approached a group of women and said, "Will you be my friend?" And they kind of looked at me like, "Whoa, are we back in kindergarten?" I didn't care. I was desperate. Desperate. And I said, "I don't have any friends. I need some sober friends and I need a sponsor." And I just stared at them, waiting for someone to do something. That's how I got my first sponsor. Highly recommend it. Look someone dead in the eye. Not socially awkward at all. And that's how I got my first sponsor. I immediately worked all the steps because I was struggling to get a job. So I made getting through the steps my job. It was my focus. I was so desperate to have relief from that terrible, uncomfortable feeling that I shared with you I've felt my whole life, and it just snowballed and compounded up until then. And I'd say somewhere around my first year or so of sobriety is when I started doing some sponsoring. I did some service work. But it took me a long time to feel like a regular human being. I wasn't one, like I said, one of those people that just heard everything, understood everything. Everything just kept flowing along. No, it took me a long time. I had never understood who or what I was, no matter how cliche or boring that sounds. I had no idea. I had a lot of learning to do. I went to a ton of meetings. I didn't ever hear the 90 and 90, but I managed to do it anyway. Because I was terrified of free time. So if you're out there and you're terrified of what you're going to do in between meetings, there's a lot of them around here, let me tell you. Yeah. And a lot of meetings have the meeting after the meeting, if you hang out. I did not do that for a long time, I'll be totally honest, because I was just a scared little person. But once I did, it really helped with that feeling of it's just me. It's only me. Only I have these problems. Only I think these thoughts. Only I act this way. But hanging out with other alcoholics outside of the meetings, that goes away. And it's not anything I'm doing. Some might say it's part of the spiritual experience that comes with fellowship. I'm not thinking about myself the whole time. So what it's like now. It's cool to think about how much has happened since then. And a bit freaky. So let's talk about the places I've been sober. So I've been to weddings sober. I've been to funerals sober. I had my own wedding sober. In fact, it was a dry wedding and nobody complained. I've been to gnarly heavy metal concerts sober. No one cares. Yeah. I have moved across the world several times sober. I've gone to meetings in several different states. And because of Zoom, even multiple countries. Recently, my family and I moved back from being stationed overseas. We are a military family. And I can't tell you how good it feels to be back where I first got sober in San Diego. The meetings here, just, they have a special place in my heart. And sometimes I like to go to the really rough ones where people are maybe not so sober, but they keep coming back. And I love to be right there next to them. Even if I could smell the alcohol, but I hear the desperation. Yeah, I like to be there for that. So sometimes I get caught up in the wondering of, why do I get to do this? But I've learned that the hows and the whys are not for me. Like, my britches aren't big enough to handle that. But there have been some amazing blessings in my life that kind of answer that for me. And when I say blessings, I've learned this the hard way. Maybe everyone else already knows this. That would be par for the course. But not all blessings are easy to accept or have. They can be really hard. But it's the payoff of doing the work. And we're familiar with that when we do the step work. When we go through our fourth, fifth, ninth, it's the same thing. So we took a leap of faith, my family and I. And after I had become a registered nurse, I decided, well, maybe, just maybe, I could do something more. But it would have to be a family effort, and it was a huge leap of faith. And we moved overseas again with a military move to Hawaii. And then shortly after that, after we were making our plans, we were going to live there, we were in with our AA group, it was good, we got sent further overseas. And I was elbow deep in a master's program that involves a lot of physical, I need to be present to do the work that I'm training to do. And as soon as we got to our overseas destination, we were hit with a super typhoon, and everything started falling to crap. And, okay, thank you. I've had times when I have thought maybe things getting too hard means I'm doing something wrong. This is hard. This hurts. Maybe I'm asking for something I'm not meant to have. Maybe I'm being greedy. Maybe this isn't meant for me and my family. And there have been times I've called my sponsor up really on the brink of giving up, thinking maybe God's telling me something. We moved thousands of miles overseas. The island that we landed on gets attacked by this massive typhoon. There's no power. Should I give up? I don't know. But we continued, one day at a time, just like the program tells us. And last year, I graduated as a nurse practitioner. We made it. We made it. Thank you. And my answer to all the hows and whys are there. Why did I not get pulled over for that DUI? I deserved it just as much as the next person. What was all that about? Maybe I wouldn't have been able to become a medical provider and take care of all these people that need medical care. I don't know. I don't have the answer. But I am so grateful that I get the opportunity to serve people on a daily basis. People from all walks of life with all sorts of different needs and issues. And it is such a mind blow to go from having my goals in life to end up in the gutter to being asked if I'll stand up here and share my experience, strength, and hope with a bunch of like-minded people. And I'm clean. Did I mention that? So I think that's about all I have, but thank you so much, everyone, and it's really nice to be up here. Thank you.
Thank you, Nikki. Let's give her another round of applause. Please, please come back again and join your story. Thank you so much. Okay, I would like to thank the residents and the house of the house and the Women's Auxiliary for a fantastic dinner. We will now close in the usual manner and a prayer of our speaker's choice.